Yeah, I hated to come back.
There we go. Okay. Welcome. Want to call this meeting to order of the Work Group of Regional Education Delivery Systems. This is an informational meeting today. And we have three primary items on the agenda. But first, I want to remind the team here, the panel, that our next meeting is October 8th at 10 a.m. And also want to remind everyone that you might recall that if we were going to come forward with any proposed legislation at all, that November 20th is that deadline that we want to meet for having that go forward. So we're rapidly approaching that date. So I'm hopeful that today's meeting and the meeting on the 8th will be very productive in moving forward ideas that that we think may require some sort of legislation. In terms of the agenda today, I wanted to make sure that we had on there to get, you know, an update of where the COSA group is on technology. Because as you might recall, we spent a good amount of time here with this team talking about those issues that that technology work group with COSA is exactly working on. So we're hopeful to hear any sort of update on that group moving forward. And then also an update on student access to healthcare. And Representative Nathanson is here today to give an update on that, and then we will get into what I hope will be the bulk of our meeting, which is looking at the potential legislation with incentive-based cooperatives with regions in the state of all sorts of educational entities. So I think that's our charge for today. I look to the panel. Anything different about the agenda? Anything you want to add to it at all? Hearing none, we're going to move forward. And I would ask that Darren, who is one of our members here, and Chuck Bennett from COSA come forward and give us an update on that COSA technology work group. And first of all, thank you so much for coming, Chuck. We appreciate that.
Well, you're more than welcome.
And Darren, you had to come, so we thank you anyway, though.
You bet.
Sounds like
so. Remember to introduce yourselves for the record, and go ahead.
Good afternoon, Darren Drill, Superintendent of Cascade School District.
Chuck Bennett with Confederation of Oregon School Administrators.
So we're asked by the panel to take a moment to take a look at the COSA subcommittee around technology. And I believe that, as I was talking with Chuck, this committee, before I was placed on it this summer, had the handout that COSA worked on. Is that true?
Yes. Sure? Yes.
Okay, good. Really, we're still working off of that piece of information at COSA, and I'll make sure that Chuck gets us an update. I'm on a different subcommittee, so I'm going to pinch hit a little bit here. I was talking again with one of the chairs on Friday, Boyd Kaiser from North Marion, and was able to talk a little bit more about that. Again, the legislation from that group of superintendents and community members and business community that they brought together really wanted to talk about three or four things with regard to working with regard to the connectivity and all the information about the internet information for schools. The first part really is about the connectivity, and the goal would be to in having access to high-speed broadband for every student in Oregon. The goal is to make sure that that's the case. Just as much as getting heat or electricity, the goal would be to make sure that every student has that opportunity, as it is almost essentially to to do the work that we're doing. So the next piece would be the content, and a number of conversations were had in that work group about what kind of content we would need to make sure that this information gets out to our students and our students can use it effectively, learn something from it, use it while they're in school, and then be able to gain benefits from it along the way. And then finally, the collaboration, training, and communication without some professional development for our employees, regardless of their position. This information and this movement will not be well entrenched for the most part. It won't stick. And the goal at that point is to make sure that it sticks. So those are really the three big pieces that COSA had worked on. The goal was for them to get back together and make sure that we were moving forward in that concept. And from that point, I'm going to turn it over to Chuck and let him talk a little bit about the details.
Well, thank you, Darren. You all have had a presentation from our executive director on this in detail, so I won't take you. I think Darren did a really good job of summarizing the issue areas that we had looked at. If you have the piece with you, you'll find at the back of it we have a series of goals over a four-year period, sort of for each year. At this point, the committee had completed its work, made its presentation to you, and has made also a presentation to the Oregon Education Investment Board, which was well received. And we were somewhat waiting to see what their initiatives look like. We made a number of suggestions to them. We know they're in the process of determining their investment proposals for the next biennium. We're certainly hopeful that a couple of the ones we suggested would be included. As you'll recall, we believe this is an extraordinarily important part of 21st century education. But at this point, the committee has not gotten back together. It happened to completion of its work happened to coincide with first summer and then the start of school. So we're having a little trouble getting everybody back in the same room. We will have, I believe, another meeting pretty much guaranteed during our winter conference when we bring superintendents and business managers together and have an opportunity then to go over with them. We have some continuing work on a sort of a rubric of activity and decision making that needs to be completed. In the meantime, the executive director, Craig Hawkins, and I will be doing a statewide tour with five or six regional meetings, we believe, with most of the superintendents in the state. And we'll be highlighting this as an important piece of information that we are developing with them. And it's particularly trying to get a fix on the current state of the infrastructure in the state, whether or not, what does broadband service look like out there? Where is it? Where are the missing pieces so that we can begin to share those with Business Oregon, that who we believe to be the most appropriate state agency for us to be talking with about that sort of vital and kind of fundamental part of the program. And also working with districts, developing a strategy for putting together some best practices relative to in-school infrastructure. We sort of, you get the pipe to the door, and then what happens to it? And that's been an ongoing issue as districts have tried to develop broadband and Wi-Fi capabilities as well as cabled capabilities inside their own campuses. And so that is going to be underway, and we will be doing a substantial amount of work with that. We have identified several key partners. COSA is developing close relations with Apple and Intel, working toward cooperative discussions with them, keep them engaged in this discussion. We think they're really important partners. as well as continuing to look for other partners that would be interested in this work. And we also still have work to do developing the relationship with ODE that gets us all on the same page, sort of talking about this together, kind of where are we going with both e-learning as a broad policy discussion, but also in curriculum development, curriculum adoption, all of that kind of kind of activity. And so a lot of it, too, for us is also informing our members just that we have this level of commitment at COSA to deal with the whole kind of power-up question. We don't at this point have plans to specifically introduce legislation. We'll probably look, we'll probably be a little more opportunistic with legislation as we see issues coming down the pike and have had a chance to talk with legislative committees. We may well bring some ideas to the fore during the session or just in advance of the session. We'll particularly be making contact with the policy committees as we see policy areas for discussion and the Ways and Means sub as well as the co-chairs as we see situations where funding would be necessary to advance certain portions of this that have been identified.
One of the things, Chair Mabbitt, is that there's really two sets of conversations that are happening. There's a set of conversations around how do you ensure that you have the right infrastructure at every district. So we have a number of districts that have are asking that question. They're struggling to make sure that they get the internet services that they need and make sure that they're working. So there's one set of conversations there about the effectiveness of it. The second part of it is for those districts that feel a lot more comfortable, particularly metro area districts that have that connection really easily, it's a conversation around what kind of relevant curriculum do you need. So when you talk to superintendents, they're at different levels. One's talking about, hey, can I make sure I get the right amount of connectivity and everything's good? The other one is, what is the conversation we need to have about, can we talk to ODE about adjusting, you know, e-learning as Chuck was talking about? So we need to get a little bit more on the same page to make sure, are we good with the first one? And then how do we approach the second one?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, go ahead.
So do you know yet where the holes in connectivity are in the state?
I couldn't tell you that. What I can say, Tricia, is anecdotally, when I sit and visit with superintendents at meetings, somebody will say, man, we're struggling to make sure that it's up and running. It's not that it's not there. It's, does it continue to work? Is it up on a regular basis? Can we make sure that we can, you know, can we make sure that we can count on it as it goes? Does that make sense? I mean, their conversation is that it's also about, does that particular school district, are they managing those pieces well? And that's not something for me to discuss. It's just that conversation that happens.
So as I understand it, we're now at a point where all districts have access to...
We're not positive that's the case. Not all districts. I mean, you've got some districts that may well be off the grid or are using something that would not... You and I... living in a metropolitan area might not view as sufficient. I think where this is going to, and I'm not sure how we'll get all of the information. We're going to be doing surveys over the next several months on a variety of issues, but including this one, trying to find out if people really do understand what is available and have they accessed it yet. The cost... making sure, you know, what do they look like in terms of just the hardware they're using? I mean, a lot of these districts have hardware that might be
Macintosh
substantially out of date at this point. It's also, ultimately, how do you pay for this stuff?
Right. It's also about what providers can you get?
Yeah.
Well, I'm 15 miles away from here, but I'm really stuck with one provider.
That's
over the last 12 months, he went out of business, and then we went back into business. We had to wait around for him to make sure that he was good to go.
That's kind of where I was going with the access issues, because that's not just a problem for school districts. It's also a problem for cities, counties, and businesses within those areas.
Right.
So it does seem like Business Oregon
is the place to go.
Should be working at providing access to everyone.
One of the nice things that COSA is going to do this year, this October essentially, is to go regionally. Instead of having one meeting where all superintendents come, they're going out to five different places. I believe Medford, Coos Bay, Baker, Sisters, and Beaverton, and try to get, the goal is for us to get all the superintendents across the state to be at one of those meetings where we can ask some of those questions.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I'd recommend also that you talk to the Oregon and develop a partnership with the Oregon League of Cities group, because that's, again, a statewide association that actually may have funds that they could co-share with school districts.
Funds?
I doubt it.
Yes. You say?
They probably. Owning
they may. They may
that
have
will
funds.
Be the...
The other, right. The other activity I think that is critical is the Department of Education is really working hard to bring technology to use in terms of classroom activities, changing the whole textbook purchase system, allowing teachers to participate in the selection of appropriate software programs and packages, which is good for their professional development as well. And it makes sense, I think, for our group to endorse the continuation of that set of partnerships and collaboration. I also see the ESDs as having a major role because of the Cascade Technology Alliance success and how that's expanding throughout the state. So in your development of information and trying to find gaps in where services are missing, I think all of those are potential partners for funds.
Agree.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I think this is probably a question for Chuck. In your survey, will you also look at capacity issues with respect to those uses of technology in schools that are outside of the testing use of that technology lab or center, what or level of equipment? Because anecdotally, I think we've all heard that because of Smarter Balance coming online, that the anticipation is that for many areas there will not be technology for use in classroom. For classroom uses other than for testing. And so it would be really great to know what you're hearing on the ground about that.
Yeah, we hear already that capacity beyond testing, in fact, capacity to test in a number of districts just because of the number of terminals they have available for any purpose is going to be eaten up with Smarter Balance and other testing requirements, so that'll become a real factor. I think at this point, a number of districts are really challenged just meeting the requirements of testing over the next couple of years. So this is really a very complicated problem that represents a substantial new expense for districts, and so. The other area will be, I think, very seriously determining if the Oregon Education Investment Board decides this represents an area of investment that they need to start looking at, rather than the more diffuse investments, whether it's time to start targeting, which would be one of our arguments to them relative to this, and I think part of the message we gave them during our testimony is this is an area that really demands statewide education leader investment, and they are in the lead. So.
Other questions? Well, I have a couple, I think. Chuck, you mentioned that when you went before the OEIB board, you mentioned that you may have suggested a couple of initiatives that they might take on that in terms of technology. Is there anything specific in here that you guys, because I didn't get a chance to hear that proposal to them.
Yeah, and I wasn't present for it.
Oh, okay.
Craig made the presentation. So how he framed the activity, I don't know. I apologize.
No, that's so fine. I'll go back and take a look at those minutes. I am curious, though, which specific suggestions may have been made to the OEIB, because I know there were some keen interests on this team of certain things within your report, and be interesting to know which of those OEIB might be considering And then my other question is, did the committee itself, or is it a committee or a subcommittee, then this technology group, a committee?
Well, it's a, yeah.
Okay. Did the committee identify specific things other than funding that would require legislation to make this vision come true?
Well, I think that it may well take some legislation in terms of funding for Business Oregon to be able to accomplish some of the goals that would be described for them if they were to have to participate in expansion of the infrastructure
right.
or develop an inventory. I would just assume they would want to have funding for that, which would require some legislation or some action by the legislature. And I'm looking just at year one, okay? I'm not looking as you
right.
look at this.
Right.
Again, some of these activities that are described for ODE, I would think would require funding. There would be some sort of personnel, either shift or addition, to accomplish it. One, and I don't know how this would be resolved. I would think legislatively, but it may be just the way I look at the world. But trying to establish some sort of education coordinating responsibility would be who takes on the responsibility to coordinate this. I mean, organizations like COSA are really good at sort of pointing at issues and maybe some ideas, but we're not geared up for that kind of responsibility. That's not what the organizations do well, try to coordinate all kinds of public and private institutions for that. Although in the current vacuum, we can play some role, and I think that's important. I think ODE has at least the structure in their organization through the virtual school program to maybe beef it up and take that kind of activity on. But again, it just seems that it would require some legislation to do it. And it always, I apologize, but it does often come back to funding, because once you come up with these ideas, I think everyone expects that you'll help them pay for it. And then I think the whole professional development area surrounding both development of, particularly once the pipeline hits this, once the cable hits the school, sort of the best way, the best practices for using capacity in school districts, how to set up the infrastructure inside of schools, the whole professional development surrounding the use of e-learning and computer resources, computer-based resources. I think at this point, there are so many of these different new kinds of or realizations of the need for professional development in a whole range of areas that that may well require, again, some sort of specialized either funding or coordination, whether through the virtual school district or some other way, to assist districts in developing the kind of a fairly sophisticated professional development that would be needed.
It puts on some added pressure, for lack of a better word. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a way to say, hey, you know what? I hear those big districts are using this internet protocol stuff. That's fascinating. Well, medium-sized districts say, well, guess what? There's medium districts and small districts doing the same. That puts a lot of pressure on people the same size as like myself. So if state next door is doing this kind of work, then our community is going to look and say, well, they're doing it. Well, how come you're not doing it? And that does that. When there is information from ODE or some sort of process that Chuck talked about, at every level, because there's going to be early adopters at every size school district. There always is. Once that happens, the others will come along. It's incumbent upon people in my position to take a hard look at that and say, hey, you know what? We can get that done.
And that's that's actually a fairly specialized workforce, too,
right,
that has
right.
to be available kind of across right. the board that you can attract into the schools
right.
to work.
Mr. Chair.
And that can be tricky also.
Go ahead.
That was, you were, must have been hearing some of my
yeah,
brain waves,
sure, yeah.
Chuck, and I was wondering, I can't imagine 197 school districts, each and every one of them having the resources to bring in that kind of talent. So I was wondering if there is an ESD that is developing that kind of expertise,
wow.
much the way one of them did about constructing a school. Is that happening somewhere out there where districts could go?
Yes.
Like
yes.
Northwest?
Yes. Well, there's four ESDs that joined together to create the Cascade
Technology Alliance.
Yeah, and it's kind of changed, didn't it?
They've
made it broader now, the Cascade Education Alliance, I think. but there are a whole number of districts now outside of those four ESDs that have plugged into what they're doing there. And so, yes, the answer is yes. And there's infrastructure available for those who obviously would not be able to put that together themselves. And so I think the model is there. Chuck, a couple of things that you mentioned I want to kind of put together so that maybe put a bow on it, and that is this. You mentioned a couple of three or four areas that may possibly need some legislative work. And then you also said earlier that as the session kind of shapes up, I'm paraphrasing you,
yeah.
as the session kind of shapes up, you'd see where those might fit in into legislation in the session, right? That's
yes.
what you're thinking?
That's how I'm looking at it right now. Part of it is, enormous reluctance to try to put together some sort of omnibus IT e-learning bill. Number one is figuring out kind of what that would be that is inclusive enough, and also just really the state of understanding of where the problem, you know, sort of what are each of the different kinds of problems. It struck me that at least coming into this first year, and I looked kind of at what the first year outline was, it may make more sense to kind of take a look and see where there are other activities underway that might be somewhat related that we could bring these issues in. I do think, though, that as we look out, I think whether it's during the next short session or the next full session, we should have enough understanding of the size of the problems out there or opportunities. They really aren't problems. They really are opportunities. And what some of the existing activities, whether in state government or in education, like in the regional services, whether it's, you know, ESDs or combinations of ESDs, are there to begin look at a more comprehensive set of bills. But at this point, I just don't feel like we're really solid enough to bring that kind of legislation on what's needed.
And probably the final question from me, approximately what date will you have your winter conference completed and those five regional meetings completed?
January,
okay.
Yeah, we will complete our October meetings at the end of October.
Yeah.
And then we will... And I'm trying to remember the dates of the winter. I think it tends to be in January.
Into January. Right.
Into January. It's usually just before session starts. So we'll have a pretty good, I think, a pretty good fix on what, say, four or five specific issues that are appropriately brought to the legislature would look like.
Chair Mabbitt, the other point is that if you look on page two, that subcommittee is by far the largest subcommittee that was put together last year. This had by far the most interest of the four subcommittee groups, and they're really, if you take a close look, you're really represented across the state in a number of different areas. This is an issue that each and every one, and I think that's part of what Chuck's saying, which is it's kind of hard to write a bill right now if we've got this many different people doing some small piece of something at the moment. Let's take time to put something together, but this is an issue that's not going to go away for superintendents. Every time we get together, there's a conversation about what are we going to do about ensuring that our students have the tools that they need to be 21st century learners. If we're a 40-40-20 conversation, if it's the conversation we're going to have, then this is a vital part of that process. And these leaders aren't going to let go of that.
And this is, following up on Darren's comments, I want to make sure I really underline it. This is just the kind of issue, I think, that was contemplated with the creation of OEIB. This is just the kind of issue they should be taking on and providing leadership in, as well as investment. And so that, I think, will be important. And certainly there will be, well, obviously, there will be legislation relative to OEIB and their mission and their continuation. And certainly we'll be watching that and looking at that bill as a potential area to help them get focused on an issue like this.
Anything else? Oh, Representative Nathanson.
Thank you. There's one discrete aspect of all of the many ideas included in the report that I've been talking about for over a year now. I wanted to explore it with you for just a moment. I see it mentioned on page 7. It's under Game Plan Goal 1. One of the things that's mentioned is develop a model for regional and state-level support for infrastructure. Mm-hmm. One of the things I had mentioned in previous meetings is even apart from the need to expand access, people are using technology in classrooms now. And some teachers are spending time trying to figure stuff out or get something back up and running that's down. And they're losing classroom time, or they're spending time in the evening when they could be working on something with students or students' parents, and instead they're trying to figure out technology stuff. I think we have a need now to support teachers in classrooms. Is this concept about support for infrastructure, is that is that hardware, or is this about people helping people using the hardware or the infrastructure, if that makes sense? I'm also concerned that I think we need to develop help now separate from we should develop support for infrastructure if and when we're ready to expand this access to broadband. Did that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you're making a very good point. I think there, what you are describing, too, Representative, I think, is what's going on in sort of isolated, well, it's not really isolated, but in areas of the state. I mean, you've providing that with your Cascade Educational.
Cascade Technology Alliance.
Their alliance, and that's the kind of program that can evolve. The question is, and it may be well one of your recommendations that that there is a model existing in the metropolitan area that may well be worthy of repetition around the state, looking at what at least on an interim basis can be the kind of support that districts need, because it you're just hitting, I think, on exactly the kinds of problems that districts run into and teachers run into, who are sort of told, here's a computer, here's a projector, there's the screen, and you can hook up to the Wi-Fi and there's classes available. Well, whoa, you know. This isn't a Blackboard, and it isn't a, you know, it's a very different kind of teaching, and a lot of teachers, particularly teachers, I assume, and Lori would know better than I do, but as I've understood it, who have been in the business for a number of years, may well not have been exposed to using these kinds of tools in the classroom and how best to make it fit and enrich the educational opportunities of those kids.
My comment is that your answer is both. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you knew that already, but the reality is there are two types of problems that I see in my own district. One is, do we have the right amount of technical infrastructure, the hardware, the switches and things to do the things that some of our staff want to do? And so you're working on that side of it. On the second side of it is, how do you deal with staff members who might be a little more veteran, so they didn't learn this stuff? This is not something that became normal in their programs as part of the way in which they teach. So they've got a learning curve. They're trying to figure it out. It's not that they don't want to try. Almost mm-hmm. every person that I have wants to try. They just don't know how to do it. And then the third piece is for those folks that are younger or less veteran or have been early adopters of technology, when something doesn't work, I need to fix it now. Because your point about
exactly.
I'm in the middle of my classroom, the thing
yes.
breaks.
Yes.
I need to fix it now. And what we call it at Cascade is real time. Okay, can we fix that in real time?
Yes.
Because I can't make a house call 3 days from now and make sure that it works. We need it now.
You can't tell if it's your local system that's failing or the website itself.
We
the
generally
server
know.
Is down.
We generally know. But the trick, in all honesty, is I've got 2,250 kids. I've got three technology people.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm.
So I've got to do one at the elementary level. I got one to do at the secondary level, and I've got the most wonderful person in the world that what we call, I mean, we tease her, but she's logistics, and she's answering the phone and sending those two guys wherever they need to go. By the way, the one guy at the elementary also is the guy that makes all of our decisions. He is our technology director. The other guy is doing the best he can. So if three things go down in the middle school and high school, then we really have a real-time problem.
Yeah.
And that's an issue.
I can tell you how the CTA group has helped with the help desk issue that you bring up. When you have a smaller organization or a smaller region, let's say, and you have a very limited number of people that are working on help desk, all of the problems, regardless of what kind they are, go to that team.
Yes.
When you get economies of scale in a larger region with four ESDs or more working together like the CTA, what happens is you have certain people who only deal with the level one cases. In other words, a teacher or a principal calls up, and that's where that issue is dealt with. And then if there's some sort of system issue, a teacher isn't calling up, but someone else is who knows the language and can say, we've got this issue, but that's going to another level. Mm-hmm. It's going to a different person who handles those types of things. Mm-hmm. And so we can get at improving help for the classroom because we know what happens now when you have a very limited number of people and those different kinds of calls coming in. The system calls get all of the priority. Mm-hmm. Not the classroom calls.
Okay.
And in larger districts, you'll have someone that is going around from school to school and working on their particular school systems. So this day I'm in your building, and tomorrow I'm in Doug's building, and the next day I'm in Trisha's, and working on those and helping that way. But smaller districts don't have anything like that. And so we need to have those prioritized levels where you talk to this person if you have this issue, and you talk to this person if you have that one. And I think we can get there. CTA has really made that happen. Need to make it stronger, though, so that Darren's district, they all know exactly who to call and when, and I doubt if that's really the case at the moment. But it can get stronger. And the last comment I want to make is, in the last regular session, there's a number of dollars that went out to replicate the Eastern Promise, you know, across the state. Well, the CTA could certainly be replicated as well if we really put some focus on technology, and we'd have a whole number of things solved. So.
Can I request, I don't know if I missed that meeting, but if someone presented the committee with documents about the Cascade Technology Alliance,
yes, they
I'd
did.
Love to have that. So could I get that?
Yes, I'll look that up you got it. Okay, yeah, Victoria can get it to you. But yeah, they came and did a marvelous presentation. It was early on in the committee's life, right?
As I recall. I remember we were downstairs in room 50.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I may have missed it.
Okay.
One last thing,
yes,
Mr.
Sir.
Chairman. I hope as part of your final report, however you package it up, that to the extent that you're moved to, that you would include this area as part of the discussion. This is one that needs to be highlighted. I think everyone thinks it's either going well or not going at all, and it is a mixed bag out there. And to the extent that this can be focused on, I think it would be really helpful, I think, for kids in Oregon.
Agreed.
As well as business offices that have to use the same system, and everybody else is trying to operate in a computer, which is every school district is trying.
Yeah, that's right. And I'll be speaking to some members of the OEIB soon, and I want to hear from them what their reaction was to the presentation and whether they have any sense of where they're going as far as the technology issue is concerned.
Yeah.
They've got a lot of things they're dealing with, but I want to see if they've got technology on their radar going forward.
Mr. Good. Chair?
Yes.
One final question. I sit on the data privacy work group, too, and we've certainly heard a lot about the need for better security of our technology systems, and I am, as a guardian of a middle schooler, aware that the Synergy system was hacked last year by one of my kids' fellow students, an entrepreneurial child who was selling changed grades for a fee. And and so the story, while it makes me chuckle too, it's also a pretty significant issue around security of our data systems, both inside the system, inside schools, and more broadly across any kind of regionalization or other, larger entities that handle masses of student data, not just the educational side, but the data side. And so I want to make sure that we're all keeping an eye on all of that as well, because our systems are only as good as the firewalls we can build that can't be circumvented.
And again, that's another advantage of CTA, because they are very sophisticated and are very concerned about security issues.
But the Synergy product is a CTA product, and this kid hacked it.
That's right.
And
that's
if a student can hack it, can you imagine what a professional might do?
They might be one and the same.
Yes, exactly.
Well,
right.
At this moment, he was a professional.
That is exactly right. Gentlemen, thank you. Appreciate it. And we're going to wrap up this topic with Cindy. Can you just give us a quick update on where you are with
the bill draft?
Yeah, the bill draft, yes.
So a couple of things that Chuck and Darren were talking about. They were talking about this instructional materials proposal. I'm turning to I can't find it exactly.
That's okay.
But I think it talks about working with ODE to get out of the 7-year cycle and into a more on-demand kind of cycle.
Mm-hmm. Page nine.
Okay. So I'm happy to report, based on this document, we're kind of ahead of, I think, the schedule. So we have a bill draft proposal in as part of our agency request. We have that back. And so as of this week, we're circulating that proposal, and I'd be happy to circulate that with this group. We've been talking ACOSA about it a bit and others, so we're kind of in that phase of our development. So that's where that's at, so yay. And then the second thing I think that Chuck and Darren mentioned, they mentioned OVSD and utilizing OVSD. We're taking a hard look at OVSD these days, and I don't know, I'll call it modernizing it, realigning it. And I noticed that some of our people that are leading that work were also on this work group, so I suspect those two have been kind of coordinated. And we're doing that without legislation, so at this point. So I just wanted to mention that, too.
Okay. We're going to move on to our next item. Just so you all know, I talked to Senator Cruz, and he told me that this day today actually coincided with the annual Honor the Volunteers Day in Douglas County. And so he is there serving lunch and doing all kinds of good things as the senator from that area. So he gives his regrets, but we certainly have Representative Nathanson here, who can give us an update on, we know that very little time has gone by since our last meeting, but at that meeting it was mentioned that there may be some sort of a ad hoc committee that takes a look at the student access to health care.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Cruz and I met informally with Senator Monis Anderson 2 or 3 weeks ago. I'm sort of forgetting the date now. To just start exploring informally
using her expertise and her role that she plays in policy committees. And I'm certainly not going to speak for another senator, but we did discuss what this committee was interested in. And I will tell you from my point of view, what I expressed in the meeting was, first of all, that we had received a report and recommendation or set of recommended actions from one perspective, and it involved the most important thing that it involved would be setting a ratio, an appropriate ratio for students and nurses to students, and that in my perspective, that is a policy issue best discussed by a policy committee that works on health care, not necessarily on education, but on health care, and that our committee, which is looking at more the organizational or administrative approach, how do we more efficiently and effectively deliver services, could be talking about some other aspect of how we bring about this access to health care in schools. But that as far as a ratio was concerned, I didn't feel, just for me personally, I didn't feel like it was in my area of expertise or what my role was on this work group. However, we spent a few minutes talking about, well, what is the effective way to organize how to make healthcare available to more students in schools. We have some school-based health centers, but there is not one at every school, certainly. There's not even one in every high school in every school district. There isn't even one in every county of the state. So how do we bring health care to schools? So there were just a variety of things discussed in a very few minutes, and I think it's for this committee to kick around a little bit. Options include, should it be ESDs that help school districts with issues of how do you find nurses, recruit them, handle contracts, handle scheduling and assignments, how do you make sure that all the schools are covered in a certain way. So you could do that through ESDs. However, other options are, well, there's a CCO, at least one CCO in every area of the state. It may cover more than one school district, but that's okay. That's a way to offer a more regional approach, and CCOs understand healthcare, and it's in the interest of coordinated care organizations. That's on the healthcare side. It's certainly in their best interest to help make sure that we're investing appropriately in prevention, in early treatment, early identification of problems, and so forth. So maybe CCOs is the way to go. I threw out the idea, well, in some places, maybe the most appropriate, maybe there need to be options. In some places, maybe it's a county health department that is real savvy on this and wants to play the lead rather than a CCO or an ESD. In other places, maybe the school-based health center or maybe the school-based health center network would like to be the overall statewide coordinating agency for how you figure out scheduling and contracts and so forth to cover the schools more broadly. So I think there's already at least four different kinds of options. Do we try to encourage one solution or try to make two or three kinds of options more available and more well known? So it's all just very amorphous right now, but I think there are plenty of ideas for how to get the word out, how to promote or suggest or encourage this through a more regional approach using one of these kinds of tools.
Yes.
A lot of questions come to mind around the total reorganization, were that to go, and we have, obviously we have members who are school nurses. One of the things that was a pretty striking takeaway for me in our last meeting when they testified before us was that school-based health centers are able to do third-party billing. and school nurses are generally funded out of education dollars. And it seems to me that if we think about our structures and our service provision and all of those other questions you asked from the perspective of how can we best maximize the dollars that are not education dollars and maybe expand on that model, even if it's a little itty-bitty school-based health center in every school building in Oregon, so that they have the capacity to do the third-party billing and pay for healthcare out of healthcare dollars, not education dollars. That would seem to me to be a very rational direction to take.
And the school nurses would work out of the school-based health centers,
though. Right.
Right.
Which would also improve ratios, but in the so doing, obviously.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Chair?
Yes.
If I could just pile on, I think the thing that has stopped adequate provision of healthcare professionals in schools to students is that they're funded out of K-12 education dollars. That's the reason they don't exist there now. And it all of the how do we administer it, I think we can work out, but the first thing we have to work out is funding. And that's why the health centers, as Lori said, have an edge over a student nurse ratio in my mind, because a student nurse ratio is going to be funded out of healthcare, out of K-12 education dollars, not out of healthcare dollars, unless we can fix that. And I don't know if that can be fixed. It certainly should be explored, I believe, to see whether or not that problem could be fixed. But those are the problems, the structural issues that we see that end up causing my members to be providing healthcare services they shouldn't.
And students not getting
and students
access
not
to the care
getting
they need.
Access to care when they need it.
Yes.
Another suggestion on building up the base of the school-based health centers is to have them directly linked to in partnership with the various schools of nurses that we have throughout the state. There are a number of nursing schools who are in a wonderful position of providing interns and providing professional development and advice, and who could, I think, develop very strong linkages with the school-based health center program.
I'm in total agreement with Tricia and my partner to the left, who's sharing Altoids with me. I really appreciate that. Thank you. Just purely because from a financial standpoint, it puts, quite honestly, me in an interesting position. When we were in the middle of a financial crisis, my choice was, do I fully fund a nurse, or do I get the additional classified employee to help with the reading instruction that needs to take place, or whatever the case may be? Or do I not be able to hire another teacher? If that adjustment is made, as a district, I'd be fully happy to say, Cascade, you're this size, this is how much you need in nursing support, and guess what, the state or from the health side of it, that's what's going to pay for that. Mm-hmm. I'd be with you. There are a number of people in my position who say to me, I don't know what I'm going to do. There's no question that we need a second or a third nurse in our district to cover all of the issues that are there, but I also need, I've got 42 kids in a classroom, or I've got, so which roll of the dice am I going to do here? And if I don't pick up the nurse, somebody, some teacher or some classified person is going to do essentially basic nursing protocols, which they do now. Mm-hmm. So that's tough. Mm-hmm. That's a tough call all the way around. It's not really good for anybody in any of those positions.
I have a question. I know it used to be this way. I'm not sure it still is. I think it is. Even if we did all of that, isn't there a basic shortage of nurses as well?
Overall shortage of nurses.
That's what I'm saying.
State.
That's what I'm saying. If we did all of this and put this structure in place, we wouldn't be able to fill the positions today.
But
right.
But Chair Doug's point is well taken, which is from time to time when we've had somebody come out and walk with our nurse to be a part of a practicum. Mm-hmm. We're suddenly in a much better way with an additional body doing that, and that we feel it when they leave.
Yeah.
Even if it's for 3 or 4 weeks, I often wonder, why couldn't it be for a year? Why couldn't it be for six months? Or, you know what I mean? If they would adjust the process
sure.
for that, that would be fantastic.
That would be great.
Yeah.
because so many of our protocols are minor.
So ODE every year prepares a school nurse report, and so we're on the cusp of issuing it within the next 24 to 48 hours. So I was reviewing a draft of it this morning, and a couple of things that struck me. In the original bill, like 4 years ago, there were some ratios outlined, but they're like an encouragement or a goal or something like that. So Representative Nathanson, that might give us somewhat of a guide, at least 4 years ago, you know, what was kind of thought as, you know, what was wise. When you look at the list, though, and the list breaks down different types of students. So there's three types, like medically fragile, and I can't remember the other two. But you see a wide variation from district to district, as you would expect. And we have many districts that have none of these students within them and therefore no nurses, but they may have one next year. So it does start to strike, at least me, that at a regional level, that may be the way to go for many of the districts, just because they don't know what is coming or who is coming in the door. So that's kind of interesting. The other thing that we noticed, and we're following up with these districts, is there were some districts that seemed to have a large number more of some students than what their counterparts of the same size would. So we're following up to make sure those aren't just anomalous reportings or what. It's kind of interesting. But when we finalize that, I will send it out through Victoria or Richard to the group for whatever it's worth. Yeah.
Yes, go ahead.
It seems to me this might be an opportunity for our next meeting. I'm just throwing out this idea. I think we have two objectives, and it's possible to accomplish both if we get the organizational and business plan right. We can expand access to health care in schools, and we can either, however you want to say it, increase the amount of health care dollars going to pay for this, or replace education dollars with health care dollars. Mm-hmm. Work on the wording of that. Mm-hmm. But I think if we get this business model right that you're talking about, we can do both. So what would it be like at our next meeting to have someone from the ESDs, CCOs, county health departments, and school-based health centers to all sit in front of us and say, which business model or models are going to get us to this point where we can replace education dollars with healthcare dollars? It may be that it's not only school-based health centers. It may be that the county health department or the CCO could also take on this billing aspect and help resolve that, but I don't, mm-hmm. I'd like to hear from them. Mm-hmm. You know, can you help us solve this problem?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that'd be a great idea, and I believe we can. It's short notice, but I believe we can get representatives from all four of those to come here, and that way at least we'd have the information of what's possible.
Yeah, great idea. Mm-hmm.
I'm also wondering if Victoria could find out whether or not there's a role for the state public health officer.
Yes.
Here.
Yes.
In this discussion.
So inviting the Oregon Health Authority, whatever.
Whoever their
section.
Person in
the
Portland, their public health.
And Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I think ODE also has a school nurse unit, right?
Not a unit.
Or something.
So we have a position that's for a school nurse, and I can tell you firsthand there is a shortage of school nurses, because there's a couple of positions in our agency that have been just year after year difficult to fill. So right now it is not a position that's filled.
Oh.
We're contracting with our retired school nurse for a few hours a month, but yeah, so technically right now we don't have a school nurse, and we've gone out for that position I think twice to try to fill it in the last 6 months or last year. Anyway, so I can tell you, yeah, there is definitely a shortage compared to other types of positions that we have.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
My ESD has linkages with the University of Portland School of Nursing program. I'm not sure how those linkages fit, But my suspicion is that there might be an academic in the School of Nursing who is studying community-based health care. Maybe that's another resource as well.
And Mr. Skolnick, who's sitting in the audience out there, just know that we're going to select Multnomah ESD to come on the 8th. Okay. Thank you. Can we leave it there? We know that we're going to invite these folks to come next time. We're going to ask them to be prepared to give presentations on what is, what could be, and what's the barriers in between, right? That's what we're looking for.
Yep.
And we can have a great learning experience next time. Sound good? All right. We're going to move on then to our next item. And Representative Nathanson, thank you for presenting on that and also your last great idea. That's wonderful. Last time I gave you a sheet of paper with a variety of different things on it, and since then you know, I've looked at that some more and did some wording and revisions and etc. But what I'm looking for today, I think, is there interest in the team moving forward to have some sort of incentive-based legislation regarding the consolidation of those non-instructional expenditures so that their efficiencies are gained and money is saved? And if so, what would we like to see put into such a bill? And my hope is that we can have a good conversation about that today and continue it on into the 8th. That is, if the group answers the first question in the affirmative. So I want to go with the first question right now. Is there a desire of the group here to explore this area further to the point of trying to draft some legislative language? Yes.
I think I'd need more specifics about what direction you're thinking of going. Incentives are sometimes sticks and sometimes carrots.
Mm-hmm.
And we would be much more of the carrot variety,
right,
in
right,
my organization. But right, we also believe that local control, whatever happens, needs to be preserved, because there are often decisions made that might not look good on paper, but there are rational reasons the local community chose them over other alternatives.
Sure.
And so I wouldn't want to have the unintended consequence of providing an incentive for one sort of set of policy choices that disadvantage those communities that aren't able or desiring of going that direction, if in fact there are rational reasons for it. I just don't know that I know exactly what you have in mind, but that would be my caveat there.
Yeah, let me just throw out a couple of things that, you know, that I'm thinking about, but I'll also mention that the state has certainly provided incentives in the past for folks who want to take advantage of them, and some do and some don't. So it certainly wouldn't be, you know, precedent setting by all means.
Sure.
But what I'm thinking about is a couple of different kinds of incentives. One might be a team of folks that would come into a region if they were invited to explore what efficiencies might be gained by consolidation of some of those functions. And so whereas, you know, there might be, you know, some region that's farther along and they've already explored this, someone else might say, we don't know the first thing of how to get started here. And so one way is to provide an incentive that says, if you want to apply for this incentive, and if so, we can send a team in to help you do that. The other incentive would be, and I'm kind of thinking about this along the lines of, we've had these planning grants and implementation grants. So if you kind of think of the first one as a planning grant, the second one would be an implementation grant, where there would be some funds, limited funds, for those who are interested in implementing a plan that some team somewhere, maybe it's this group, maybe it's, I don't know who it would be, but it can be any number of groups, It could be a new group that's put together. But the idea is to read those requests and grant those incentives to those particular regions, whether it's planning or whether it's implementation. So that's what I have in mind. Yes, Representative Matheson.
When I was listening to the comment and the potential concern that was expressed, I guess the way I've been reading incentive is that there was no stick involved or no prerequisite, you know, based on you must do this, but since you must do it, we're going to help you. What I had been reading into the use of that word incentive is if you would like to explore this idea, here's how you can get some help.
Right.
It was a more like an opt-in thing. If you're interested in looking at something, we either have people or money or whatever it is that can help you think it through to see whether it would work. So that, for me, that was the baseline
technical
of
support.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Technical
yes, that's
support.
What I...
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
As long
and,
as
and that's exactly where I am.
That's what I've been
way.
Reading into
yes.
your.
Yes, that's exactly.
Mm-hmm. Use of the
Representative
word.
Nathanson's articulated that much better than I did. But
my only other hope would be that anything that we would dream of wouldn't be then more expensive to manage than the amount that could be saved in the efficiency, which is, you know, I've lived long enough to see way too many consultants be overpaid to come in and do things that are more costly than the amount of savings achieved. So just want to put that on the record, too. Hate to be cynical, but.
Yeah, and maybe maybe I'm naive in my thinking here, but I've done this many times in the state, yeah. Been involved in many of these teams myself. And that is, there are people with expertise in this state that would volunteer for just expenses
wow.
to come in and join a team. I know I'd be one of them, who could take a look at a region and say, and write up a report and say, here's what could happen,
wow.
or at the very least a small stipend.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is that there are teams that could do this, and it wouldn't be costly to districts.
And I'd like to suggest that for districts like Darren, when he's running short of budget money, to be able to go to a regional team that might be able to provide technical assistance to come in and look at ways to improve some of the back office functions which might be produce cost savings, and have that assistance be almost free to his district. And it And we heard Jim Seger talk about this a little bit with Nestucca Valley School mm-hmm. District when they had a budget hard time period, and they were assisted by the ESD.
Michelle.
So the document you handed out at the last meeting about possible legislation, that we're setting that aside and we're rethinking. Or are we still working from this document?
Well, that was a set of ideas. I'm sure there's other ideas. What I'm trying to do is just get some brainstorming going. But I want to answer the first question first, because there's really no sense in moving forward if this team is not interested in this kind of legislation.
Well, from where I am in this moment, mm-hmm. and I'm still listening very attentively to what others think about this, is and maybe it's the skepticism I've developed from being in the building too long, but there's no such thing as free, and whatever we put into a program like this, we're taking out of our education dollars, our potential education dollars. There's no such thing as money the state has that's not a potential education dollar. That's what we do here, is fight for those dollars to go into our state school fund.
Mm-hmm.
Anything going into any place else is, in my view, taking away from our potential to educate students today, which we are dramatically short of money for. Many of these problems we talk about exist because we don't have enough money in our education system.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're trying to cobble together and band-aid together workable solutions in an underfunded system. So I'm very cautious about any proposal to put money in any new program, regardless of how good it sounds, because I know those are potential education dollars that we need right now. So that's where I am generally. And then specifically, my folks are very concerned with the breadth of this in terms of which functions we're talking about. If we wanted to pick out a couple that we've heard have real potential and see if that's possible, I don't know about that. Maybe that's a potential. But every non-instructional service in schools, that's not even feasible. How would we do that? So I think we need to narrow our scope dramatically if we're going to move forward with this to things that we know we have success in already, that we could easily duplicate elsewhere. And with the caveat that there, as Lori said, may be very good reasons why districts in the rest of the state that are not doing those things are not doing those things. So am I interested? Perhaps. It depends on what that means. Okay. But I am very cautious.
Just a couple of comments, and I appreciate what you're saying, Tricia. In the fourth bullet on the document that I threw out there, and remember, this is just ideas to get ideas flowing. Mm-hmm. There are examples out there for every single one of the things that's listed here in terms of consolidation of services and saving dollars. No question about that. And so I understand what you're saying. I wouldn't want to have this huge, gigantic, list either. Some limitations, I think are good, but people keep mentioning local control. We don't want to limit too much. If someone has an idea out there on how they can save some dollars, I think they ought to be, I'm not done yet, I think they ought to be encouraged to do that. Second, let me be clear on the kind of dollars I'm talking about. When we're talking about millions and millions of dollars in OEIB initiatives and money here and money there, I'm talking about a small amount of money. Let's say you were going to do, either you said you're going to do three regional grants or you're going to have this much money and you're going to decide how it goes and how it's spread. But I'm thinking about, somewhere in their neighborhood of, let's say, $200,000 to $300,000 total for this. That's what I'm thinking. And when you spread that across 500,000 plus students across the state, we're talking about a little tiny little bit of money. And so, and let's remember, the whole point here is that the savings that would be garnered from this kind of work, the idea here is that the savings would far exceed any sort of investment that goes forward. So that's why I'm certainly wanting to go forward with this, because it's not going to cost money. It's going to save money, and I know it will, because we already have enough examples out there. But I agree with you. We shouldn't just have a huge, gigantic smorgasbord out there. Let's focus folks and say, here's some things we know work. If you're interested in looking at these, great. Representative Nathanson.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to point out that when you said it's going to save money,
yes,
the point is not to save money that should be used elsewhere in the state's budget. The point is to reinvest, keep it invested in schools.
Absolutely.
That's the point. That has to be our bottom line.
That's right.
It's for schools.
That's right.
Period.
That's right. So that's what I'm saying. And I wasn't talking about the whole state budget. I was talking about within K-12.
Yes. I just wanted to clarify for anyone who might be listening. Sometimes saving money means, of course they're going to lower my tax. Or then that's money to go send to this department. Yeah. That is not at all what the conversation is about here.
And then I also want to just mention again that if people don't want to participate in this, they don't need to participate in it. Mm-hmm. No one's going to pressure them to do so. it's a voluntary kind of thing.
So, Jim?
Yes, go ahead.
I have a question probably for you. So we spent the last couple of months hearing about some really good programs that the ESDs are offering. There was the Cascade, you know, the mm-hmm. Technology Alliance. Mm-hmm. There was the Legal Services, which caught my attention mm-hmm. out of, you know, Central Oregon.
Right.
So what stops those programs from being replicated by other ESDs? I'm assuming the ESDs talk to each other, so they're aware of each other's programs, and yet we don't see them replicating across the state.
Part of the reason for that is capacity. There are ESDs that would love to take a look at this in their regions and don't have the capacity to do it. They don't have, you know, the folks in their region who have that kind of expertise who can do it themselves. They need someone to come and take a look from an outside perspective, and I'll give you just, you know, a few examples. I know that there have been a couple of ESDs that have said, hey, we want to take a look at this, and so they've mm-hmm. tried to do some sort of grant through Chalkboard or here or there, but many of them haven't been funded. And there are also times where larger ESDs, there's this idea that, geez, if a larger ESD is wanting to look at this outside of my ESD, maybe they're trying to take me over or that kind of thing. So my hope is that a region or a couple of regions combined, if they want, would say, yeah, we want someone to come in and help us and take a look and say, where are these efficiencies? And if they don't want to do it, that's okay. You know, it's kind of similar to I think it's similar anyway, to districts are able to opt out of an ESD if they want right now. The gigantic majority of them are not, but they have the option to do so. No one's pressuring them to do so, but they have the option to do it. This would be the same kind of thing here. A region would have the option of having some assistance to say, how can we get at efficiencies that other people have gained? We just don't know where to start. And I know that where to start is the hard part. You can say, well, we want to have a conversation and start having some efficiencies. High Desert ESD, their region, the only reason they really got it going and made it happen is because they did get a grant from Chalkboard, and Chalkboard came in and did an efficiency study with them. But that was expensive. There's other ways to do this that aren't so expensive. Representative Nathan.
Thank you. Something just dawned on me. It has to do with, I'm wondering what kind of services that some ESDs are buying for their school districts, where they are having to write contracts with the private sector to acquire the service. Maybe it's electronic subscriptions to an online school magazine, or I don't know, something else. But there must be some types of services that many, if not all, ESDs are acquiring because they're buying it. They're not employing people who actually do something.
That's
true. That's
right. I wonder if we have a sense of what those things are, and if someone could be a negotiator, a sort of like a consolidator and negotiator. If there were a group purchase, maybe you could even bring down the price of whatever that thing is that they're buying for schools to use. It may be billing software or electronic subscriptions. I don't know what, but there might even be some little bits of money, you know, and once you save some hundreds of thousands here and hundreds of thousands there, then you've got another couple million to do something with, right? I wonder how we could find any of those kinds of things where ESDs are individually contracting for, but through some sort of group purchase, maybe could get even better deals. How would we find that out?
This reminds me of the Business Best Practices Advisory Committee work that was created by former Senator Vicky Walker, that also subsequently didn't get funded. We got another committee that I was serving on. And that was exactly our goal, is to find out what the contracting and technology and other kinds of purchasing best practices were that were happening out there, so that we could learn, replicate, and then help other school districts and ESDs know what those were. And unfortunately, because of lack of funding, that enterprise went away before it really even had the opportunity to do much more than create the criteria. That work is on the table. Those criteria were created, at least for some of those functions. Maybe that could be a part of the work of, or part of the technology library resource that this troubleshooting team that you're envisioning, Jim, could rely on in its bag of tools for doing this kind of work, so that we could maybe build on some past successes and past investments by the legislature moving forward, and then taking it one step farther. I think that would be a really great thing to do.
By the way, there's an example of exactly what you're talking about that would be near and dear to your heart, and that is the Destiny Library Management System. The fact is that there is a statewide contract for Destiny that many, many school districts across the state and ESDs are on, but there's also many school districts who said, nope, I want to do my own deal with Destiny, even though Destiny told them, if you do that, you will pay more. And they're paying more. But they knew they were paying more. It's not like they didn't have a choice. And it's the same thing with data warehouses, by the way, and student information systems. They know they're paying more, but they want that control. Which, again, I never would want to mandate that they must do something different, but I like them to just have options.
I think it's very interesting. I really appreciate Ms. Wimmer pointing out this idea had been percolating in the past, and especially interested to hear that the seed was planted in my district, because Senator Walker is practically a neighbor of mine. She was my senator.
You know, if you're around this business long enough, you
that's
see
right.
it all come around.
That's
a few
right.
times.
That's for sure.
So, may I ask
yes.
then, you're envisioning a team of experts, a troubleshooting team or a design team that would operate, I assume, if I think about how structurally this would happen, if they're one team statewide, they'd have to probably live in ODE or someplace. How else would you coordinate it?
Yeah, I'm not thinking of one team, by the way.
Okay, I really don't know what the heck you're talking about then,
okay.
in terms
okay.
of how you draft it.
Okay, let me.
What elements are you thinking about putting in legislation?
Let me mention it to you. Let me spell it out for you here. The way it can work is, and believe me, I've done this. I've been on teams who go in and do management efficiency audits for school districts. But in this case, you can do it for a region. And we've had teams go and do that kind of thing too. But it doesn't have to be one team that does it for the whole state. You have to have, you know, four or five people who have this person has expertise in business functions. This one has an expertise in this or this, whatever they want to look at. And or if they want to just look at business office functions, then you have, you know, two or three people. And we can name experts all across the state who would be willing to lend their hand to this. And so this region is interested, so we put together this team. And that's where ODE comes in. ODE, along with the ESDs, helps to put those teams together who would go in and do that that study in that particular region.
So
that's what I'm talking
about.
So
the administration of it would be at ODE?
Well, there's not much administration to do. It's just putting the team together.
Well, another way of doing it, I'm sorry. So, Jim, because when you started talking about, you talked about in terms of planning and implementation, and where my head went was with all the strategic initiative grants that we did this mm-hmm. last year and a half or so.
Right.
Is that what we did with those is we had parameters on each grant and, you know, and priorities that we set, but basically we left it up to, in a lot of cases, locals coming in with their proposals. So how that would translate to this is there would be, you know, a set amount of money, maybe we'd say up to this amount that you'd get, but we would say to the regions, come in with your proposal, we'll probably, you know, we'll give you a priority if you're, you know, partnering with, you know, X number of districts, your local community, you know, whoever it is.
That's right.
And so that would leave some flexibility for these local regions to come in and say, you know, we'd like to study legal services and technology and food service, but this one over here wants to study, you know, something else. I don't know, whatever it is.
That's right.
Yeah. And so what we saw happen with some of the strategic initiatives when we did that, we had some proposals that were large and some that were smaller, and both got funded in some areas, you know. So that's one way of doing it. So it's not that ODE, I mean, we're putting out the money. And then, and I'm not sure, I mean, this could work as well. Some of our initiatives that were a little more groundbreaking, so to speak, that locals didn't have expertise in, we did contract for technical assistance person to come in and help them out. I'm not sure that this would warrant that, but that was another model that we used for some of them.
Representative?
Thank you. That reminds me of something that came up at least two or three meetings ago. And I didn't pursue it at the time because I didn't want us to get sidetracked, but it's come up again. In those grants that ODE was offering, I heard from my ESD that they were pretty disappointed that they could not apply for one or more.
Correct.
Because ESDs were prohibited from applying. And
right.
They said, but we had this kind of innovative idea. We wanted to partner between the ESD and the community college and one particular district. We wanted to do something or another, and it was going to be like better, it was going to be more cost effective or a better service or something. But they couldn't even apply because they were excluded. And that didn't... I was quite disappointed to hear that. So what's the issue there?
Yeah, a couple of things. So the two pieces of legislation that the legislature passed didn't mention ESDs as a recipient of the grants. And, like, for example, in the network, the ESDs were not mentioned at all. What we did with some of the grants is we said, okay, an ESD, you can't be the primary recipient because you're not mentioned in the legislation, but you can be one of the partners, you know. And then we also said, okay, ESDs, you can be a fiscal agent as well. But the ultimate reason was because the legislation never mentioned ESDs. Now, having said that, I did review a bill draft that's coming soon to a legislature near you that goes in and amends. It was primarily in the network, and it adds in ESD, ESD, ESD as a primary recipient. The other group that we heard from that was kind of disappointed, if you will, about applying was the tribes.
Right.
Because the tribes also were not mentioned specifically. And while some of them have some nonprofit organizations, those nonprofits, I mean, they weren't specifically kind of created for educational purposes. So the tribes ended up needing to partner in, too, with school districts and so forth. So there's a few places where tribes also are being put in.
And to ODE's credit, when some of those issues came up, you know, I heard about them immediately.
Yeah.
And worked with ODE, and they really did go as far as they could with the legislative language to get ESDs more involved. Some ESDs missed out on some early things because we didn't get it fixed fast enough, but that's on all of us.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm, you know, the fix is happening now, and so it'll be much better next round. Yes.
Just to add to that, too, at the Willamette ESD, we put together the Western Promise, fashioned after the Eastern Promise. That thing has taken off. And
that's right.
That ESD, Dave Nabotny did a great job of putting together now all 21 districts in this local area are together with that. And I think I was at the meeting 2 weeks ago where we were over 170 credits offered.
Isn't that cool?
For every district in this area, from Perrydale with 90 kids to Salem-Keizer with 40,000 kids. And so there, I mean, in a 5-month period with the money that came from one of those carve outs and ODEs mm-hmm. being flexible with the process, that's an example where it really worked. And it's working already, and our own students are already benefiting. And unfortunately, it wasn't so much the community college in the area that worked, it was Western Oregon who stepped up and said, we're happy to join in the partnership. And suddenly, so in that situation, the ESD was able to partner in, as Cindy talked about, and that's worked really, really well. That's a huge positive, an immediate positive already. I already have kids signed up for credits, college credits, and they don't have to pay until after they're done. So many kids won't do it because they're a little worried about how hard it was going to be. They want to do it up front. It's $25 a credit, and it's amazing. That's an amazing partnership
really cool.
that's happening. And Western Oregon has been tremendous in saying to our teachers, hey, guess what? We know you didn't get a master's degree in math. That's okay. We're going to partner with you and work it out so that we can do that. In the past, we've had some trouble with our community college partners when they say, well, your teacher in math doesn't have a master's degree in mathematics. Well, no, they have a master's degree in education. So we can't really work that out. And that's where, you know, to Nancy's credit at OEIB, they've been trying to bust down those doors and say that. But as you mentioned that, I appreciate you say that, because one of the great things in the last 5 months has been able to get that money. We hired somebody immediately through working with the WSD. They got right on board with their curriculum person there at the WSD, pulled in 21 superintendents, and we all agreed and signed off in immediate fashion. So that would be something, if you're ever interested, you should have Dave Novotny come talk to you about it, because that's been tremendous real fast.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. And there's a couple of other regions that have had similar success right. in replicating the Eastern yeah. Promise.
They really have. The mentor grant also, Representative mm-hmm. Nathanson, has been tremendous in this area. Yeah. Salem-Keizer carried it, and this last year invited seven or eight of us school districts to join. I was able to put just personally 12 people last year and 14 people this year into that process. I don't think anybody, including ODE, realized how many new teachers we would have this year.
We did not.
So, and the legislation is clear about how many hours we have to do it. We're trying to figure out how to solve that problem. But our ability of talking about retention and putting particularly minority teachers into the pipeline is truly amazing. Those two pieces have been fantastic. And to Sandy Cuss' credit before, and now Christy Perry's credit now, all the small districts, Jefferson State and Cascade, Dallas Central, Perrydale, Woodburn, Silverton, Mount Angel, we've all been able to join in that grant. We meet once a month, and those are the pieces. I mean, I get what you're talking about with the non-instructional pieces, but some of these instructional pieces have carried a lot of weight for superintendents in the last 6 or 8 months.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
That's been pretty impressive from our end. I guess my point on your non-instructional piece, and I'm with my colleagues here, so make that note on the record, right?
When we go
into negotiations, will you help me out a little bit?
I'll let him know.
I'm a little concerned about that as well. And here's the only piece. If you have somebody come in and say, here's your efficiencies, it would be difficult in small districts to say, well, okay, I've got efficiencies. I better jump on them, or I'm going to look the fool not to do mm-hmm. them. At the same time, I'm also in the position where I really would like to know what those efficiencies are, so if there's a way for us to do them, we should do them. We've had this conversation before. So I'm kind of on the fence. At one level, I've done it long enough to be a bit jaded about going to my board and saying, we better do this or it's not going to look quite right, but for whatever reason, community-wise, locally, we can't make that go. It might be that efficiency costs us 2 employees. You know, and I don't know about you guys, but I've done enough of that in the last 5 years, telling perfectly hardworking people they don't have a job for no other reason than they were breathing and they're in the wrong, they're too far down the line to keep it. At the same time, I'm really with you with this idea about, I would like to know if there's a specific way to save money and it's not instructional, how can I do that? So I'm stuck a little bit in the process.
One possible way to solve that dilemma is to focus on new technologies and new changes that are occurring in education. And that those teams, I think, could be advisory teams to school districts in bringing in broadband, in bringing in a lot of this new activity. You don't challenge your current staff. What you're doing is you're figuring out how to solve and bring resources in new ways.
Doug, and I agree with you. I just think about if you're at Oregon School Boards Association, at the state conference in a couple months or wherever, where you well know that there are certain districts with boards that are, I think, much more confident in what they're trying to accomplish versus others that are in turmoil about how to solve whatever issue is there. And I don't mean it to get political, but the reality is
It's political,
and you have to figure out how to move those efficiencies in a way that makes good sense for your community. At the same time, Chair Mabbitt's talking true. I mean, I've had a couple of colleagues who have asked and paid for retired superintendents and business managers to come in. The WSD had this organization come in. It's not an organization. It's really a couple of retirees who have come in and say, let us truly evaluate your district. And Silver Falls, I got to give Andy Belando credit. That's a little difficult to have somebody come in and open up your books and take a look and then put together a report. But he did it, and his response is, I'm better for it in the process. So if that's truly of the fashion that we're talking about, then I guess I'd have to kind of lean in that direction and say, let's take a look and see what's what.
Yes, Representative.
Listening real carefully to your words, I think this is going to have to be viewed as not a suggestion that all of a sudden some group says, we're going to send some people to audit you.
That's right.
That's not what this should be about. It should be if an ESD or a couple of ESDs together wants to invite some help. They say, we've been thinking about, is there a different way to do this? Let's say our contract with so-and-so, that they've been the broker for. Our contract is coming up next year, and we're wondering if there's a different way to do that. Or we've got two retirements coming up in this department next year, and we noticed that so-and-so is organized a little differently. Is there a different way of doing that now that we should be thinking about is for one reason or another. So I'm picturing something that's where there's an invitation. Could you please come in and help us think through this thing? There may be something to it. There may be not. But rather than, okay, here's some big organization that is going to go around, move around the state from one ESD to another saying, we're doing an audit of you now, and then we're going to tell your board the results of the audit.
That's right.
That's way too big. It would take way too much time. It covers everything in the kitchen sink, and that's really not how I don't think that's going to work, really.
Yeah,
you're not going to like it either.
Well, it's certainly not what I have in mind, that's for sure, because that would not work at all.
It's the balance, right? I should be able to like it anyway because you want to know what the efficiencies are, but there are political realities of how do we do this? And it really isn't so much about my political process. It's does that report indicate to me that I need to let go of some people to make an efficiency, which for kids is a really good thing, right? I mean, that's why we're here. At the same time, there's a process by which, that's a great idea, but as you said, in a year, I might be able to make that work because I'm going to have a shakeup in the technology department or in fiscal or something, or food service along those lines. But when we say those words, there are people, there are human beings working hard for kids attached to those. And in a small community, that's important. And so it is in a large one as well. I don't mean to take away from that.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
And for some of these services, they're direct services to students, not unlike fiscal services that are the bookkeeper and the HR director and that sort of person. Food service, transportation, as two examples, are direct services to students. And so when you're dealing with direct services to students, sometimes there are more considerations than how can you do this as cheaply as possible. For example, yeah, I know that neighborhood is 8/10 of a mile from school, but we've got to get a waiver and transport those kids because
right.
of whatever reason.
That's right.
So when you're talking about some of these services, there's more to it than what is the cheapest way to do this? And I don't know how that fits into your vision.
Yeah, and well, another example, because I agree with you with your example of the 0.8 mile, but there's also examples of buses from three different school districts going down the same road.
You know, if they have special ed kids, that may be true.
Not just sped kids.
Regular ed kids.
It's the regular ed kids. It's fascinating.
Because of the boundaries?
Because of the routes, and because of how the routes are and how irregular the boundaries are.
Right.
So those regions who have done transportation studies and saw what they could do have realized savings by changing their routes when they didn't realize if they worked together how that might work. So that's why I tried to put things on here. You notice I didn't put I didn't put any sort of instructional thing on here, but food services is the same way. Food service can be. Efficiencies can be found with food service where the service remains at least as high a quality or higher. There's examples around the state that have done that. But again, I guess I'm coming back to you, Darren, and that is this. Shining that light is a difficult thing, but as a board in a particular organization and then boards together in a region, if they decide they want to shine that light on,
right. They
would have access to resources that would enable them to do that.
So
that's the whole point.
I guess I'm thinking in these terms. So, Representative Nathanson, you were saying that here's an opportunity for a group to, if you want to opt in, I think that was the word you said, mm-hmm. that gives a district a chance to take a look at it. Trisha's point, for me, is well taken. You get what you pay for. So when it's the cheapest, you get what you pay for.
Right.
And for us, slightly more money in food service, because we have our own employees do that, is important. It was important for me today. My daughter walked through the line. She was short of money, right? I happen to have an office near there. I got a phone call right after from a longtime employee who said, "Hey, buddy, you forgot to drop money in the account, but I covered your kid for $2 because she's been there for 20 years and she knows every kid
right. And
she knows what they need."
Right.
I would never trade that for a different company. Sure, those people would bring in somebody. Maybe you get that service, but that's what we're talking. I get what I pay for.
Right.
At the same time, you're right. We need to at least say that's an offer that you can go in and take a look at it. How the report comes out, I'm trying not to massage it. Doug's right. You have to say, here's the report, take a look, and then you got to be able to see. But if this group was able to say, look, here's an opportunity for every district or every region through an ESD to take a look at this, I think that's some good work at the end of the day, because then it puts the onus, for lack of a better word, on a specific district to decide how they want to do that.
And in your case, if I'm the superintendent in your district, I go to my board and say, here's why there's no reason for us to look at our food service.
Sure.
But there are reasons maybe to look at this or this or this.
Right.
Lori?
Well, and I think that all of those things make sense. And the idea of having yet one more piece of information or resource as districts cope with the budgeting that they need to do, that all makes sense. One other thing I would love to see in any legislation we might advance is that we explicitly call out for this regional efficiency audit team approach, that they also consider the economic impact on the local communities in which the school district sits. We know that 50% of our communities, the school district is the largest employer. And a number of years ago, OSBA, OEA, and COSA collaborated on an economic study that showed that for every 10 positions in education that are funded, 9 more in the local community are also built. So what happens in the school district in terms of money moving around does, even with efficiencies, does have an impact on Main Street. Mm-hmm. And so if we think in a little bit more macro sense about efficiencies in schools in terms of community economic vitality, I think that would be an appropriate piece in the equation as they do their audits.
That makes sense to me. I mean, I made note of that.
The other piece might be is, as you go through the audit, you can also say, here's some efficiencies, but we also notice this great thing that you're doing,
right.
Some accolades at the
right.
plant.
Right.
Or accommodate. Here, look. Here are the things that you did do.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And the one, the teams that I've seen reports of or actually been a part of,
so
those are included, and that's so important. Mm-hmm. Representative Nathanson.
Thank you. This is not likely to result in any concept of making more money available for the classroom. But as you were talking about local economic vitality, and I was hearing about food service, something just popped in my mind. I helped serve food one afternoon at a school as part of the farm to school program. And in my area, there's so much interest in healthier eating and farm to school and supporting local, all that sort of stuff. Also in my area, there are 3 school districts, and in the greater metropolitan area, there are more than 3. And it's occurred to me, I wonder what resources have been brought to assist those individual school districts that are making decisions to either purchase the high quality food and the fresh vegetables and so forth versus other kinds of food purchases. Is there anyone trying to do this jointly for them? They're all within a couple miles of each other. We're talking about making contract arrangements with local farmers. Are we doing this jointly as a larger project, or is each school district trying to figure it out on its own?
We administer the farm to school program, and I can tell you it's grown. What I can't tell you, my sense is it's joint, but let me get back to you after I consult with our coordinator.
We've got 2 or 3 staff people that do school nutrition
and
assist districts.
And I know our staff does provide assistance. I mean, just by way of a story from yesterday or last week that made me kind of chuckle, is someone was looking at how to use local pumpkins they had gotten in a way that was met the federal regulations around a proper school lunch. Okay. So apparently we have a recipe for meatloaf and pumpkins that works for a proper school lunch, and we provided it to whatever district needed it so they could use their local pumpkins. So I know we give some technical assistance.
Well, I guess my interest is I'm certain that you provide good assistance one at a time when an individual school district contacts you and says, we would like to do this. Mm-hmm. The point is, when you have 3 school districts adjacent to each other, all likely it could be purchasing from the same group of farmers or the same sources.
Yeah.
If they knew, and you, the little tiny bit I understand, you have to help the farmers by providing them some certainty that you're going to be buying this amount of produce at such and such a time, so they know what they should plant or what they shouldn't, because their economic fortune rises or falls based on making the wrong assumption about someone's going to buy more of this or more of that. So are we exploring opportunities for the larger purchases, or are we just answering these questions one-off when an individual school district calls this month and then 2 months later someone else does it also individually? It's realizing those opportunities for collaboration. Are we doing that where we can?
There are a multitude of examples of things that 197 school districts and 19 ESDs are doing separately, and there's a lot of examples where they're doing things together. So I know that I would like to see a whole lot more of the doing things together than the doing things separately.
And sharing pumpkins.
Try these pumpkin recipes.
I'm going to have to try that, because the meatloaf in the pumpkin that adds a taste to it, that'd be great.
It sounded kind of good, huh?
Yeah, sounds good to me. I love pumpkin. Our time is getting short here. I wonder if anyone on the panel here can tell me where you think we are, because I'm not sure where we are.
I think I was trying to hear and speak, not too much. I was trying to listen a lot early on about this idea that from a non-instructional perspective, there's an opportunity to say to a group for a small amount of money, like you were talking about, a chance to evaluate at least regionally or districts together this way in which you can evaluate the functions that you do now, and is there a way by list, by grouping, I don't know, here are some possible efficiencies that you might want to look at as a district over a period of time. I think that's pretty positive. If I'm sitting in my chair in my office and somebody says, even if it is through legislation, hey, we want you to do something like that, I certainly appreciate not the here's an audit and gotcha and here's the stick. It's because that's just another, okay, we got to jump through this hoop. And, you know, in all honesty, somebody's going to say, those people haven't been to school in 29 years. They have no idea what's going on. But the answer really is, here's an opportunity to take a look at, right, take a look at how you could become more efficient in light of the political realities or just the financial realities that you have. I think from that perspective, in the non-instructional piece, it's good. My own side note is there are a couple of instructional pieces that are going really, really well that heavily involve ESDs, and I'm wondering if we're missing on that piece. The Western Promise thing is going to – we said to the WESD 2 weeks ago, this is the kind of core mission we need you guys for, to coordinate this effort. For me, that's important stuff. That gets right to the essence of what I do, which is educate kids. So –
My thinking is the OEIB's push has been on the instructional side.
I agree.
And I think that's where those things are going to continue to roll. But as far as the non-instructional side, mm-hmm. they haven't done much at all. And, you know, here's a chance, for us to do something on that side, along with the COSA technology one and then the student healthcare one. So I'm hopeful that we can get all of those kind of lassoed and give up more opportunities for districts. Where I'm at is now, after what you said, Darren, maybe we just eliminate that whole implementation point. We wouldn't need any incentive dollars then. What we do is just provide the opportunity for regions to get information.
The nice part about some dollars is that it would incentivize us to do it. So if somebody says, hey, we're going to have somebody come out and check it out and let you know, that's great. Hey, we're going to have somebody come out and check it out, and if you do that, there's a small incentive for you to do that as a way to evaluate.
Oh, I agree. I was saying, back to the analogy of the planning and implementation grants,
yes.
Maybe we just do the planning grant part of it.
Maybe that's the case.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the case.
Mr. Chair, can you create some talking point or some concept sheets for us before the next meeting mm-hmm. for us to kind of chew on so we have a little bit more specificity? I mean, I'm liking what I'm hearing.
Yeah, I can do it based on this conversation we've had today here. I've taken some good notes here, and I can do that.
Certainly, if I may suggest, you put in themes of collaboration,
mm-hmm.
problems and development in the area of technology, working in partnerships with groups like COSA and the Department of Education. I was thinking back 40 years ago when Hardy Myers was speaker here. I was a professor at Portland State, didn't tell you that, but I was with the Institute on Aging. I was number two. We were extremely successful in bringing in hundreds of thousands of dollars from the feds in expanding aging programs in the Portland metropolitan area. And the strategy that worked out well for Portland State was to immediately link up with the gerontology program at OHSU and with the VA hospital.
Sure.
And with those two partners, we were able to show that we were collaborating, bringing in funds to strengthen aging services in a metropolitan area. And I think a similar theme might be picked up here, collaboration, partnerships, ESDs, universities, community colleges. I'd really encourage that because maybe we can create some kind of a partnership organization to go after Department of Education federal dollars or more chalkboard dollars. I don't know, to bring in to local communities. And I totally agree with local economic development impact. of school districts in rural communities. And boy, we ought to build on that as best we can. So that's another theme for you, Jim.
I got it. And I'm certain I'll forget something. So when I send out, I'm gonna try to get this done, you know, 3 or 4 days before our meeting. I'll send it out to all of you and let me know back with any comments of anything that I have forgotten, or maybe something, if I included something that shouldn't be. The last question I have for the group today is for the agenda on the 8th. And Victoria, will you and I be working on that, or will Richard be?
Probably Richard, but probably if you Richard. Need anything before you get to
okay.
that,
I'll
be happy.
So obviously this will be an agenda item that will take the bulk of our time on the 8th. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else you'd like to see on the agenda for the 8th?
How many more meetings?
I'm sorry?
How many more meetings?
I don't know.
By this, did you mean the number 3, the incentive base?
Yes, yes.
Well, I would like to see kind of like a panel, and also available not just for presentation but conversation about the ESD, CCO, County Health Department, SBHC, Department of Education.
Got it. I'm sorry. I had that written down.
Yeah, that one too.
Yes.
So maybe 2.
Public health.
Yes,
yep.
Thank you. So maybe 2. Really meaty agenda items. Just 2.
Got it.
That makes sense.
Everyone else?
We're fine.
No, I do have something else.
Oh, okay. No, I was asking, is that good with everyone?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. That sounds good. Anything further? Oh, so close. So close. Thank you. We are adjourned.
Great.
Thank you. We are adjourned.